All right. Hello. Hello, everybody. Thank you for being patient. Thank you for waiting. Welcome to Saturday at the Martinson Botello household.
Hey, everybody. How you doing today?
Hey, everybody. So we're happy to be here with you today, and we're reading your comments. Thanks for being patient again. We got so much going on. We got so much to talk to you about today, not least of which is we've just launched a brand new multi-month, fairly resource-intensive new website experience at Peak Prosperity, and people are excited. I'm excited. And people are excited.
So great.
That's going on. Huge body of work.
Yeah. Can you move that over just a tiny bit? Because then I can see
move
the
what?
Comments. That screen in front of you. It's not centered over here.
Oh, this one.
Yeah.
See? You want to center that one? Okay. There you go. That's all right. Better. Levels are too loud. No all problem. Right. No problem. We have control over everything now. If levels are too loud, we will just bring audio down a tiny bit. Yep, absolutely. So there we go. Let's pull it down a tiny bit. There we go. So that should be reasonable there.
Usually you're too soft.
No, too soft, too loud. Where are we going to go from here with all of that?
So Goldilocks story.
All right. Let us know how that sound is. John Daniels is saying, hi, Evie.
Hey, how are you doing, John? Thanks for joining us today. It's a pleasure to be here. On a beautiful Easter weekend.
Jerry says levels are good. Thanks, Jerry. Greetings from Scotland. Hey, hello, Scotland. And hello, top of the morning to all of you, everybody from everywhere. Thank you so much for being here. Of course, we just want to know what you think, and you're part of the conversation. So we're monitoring the chat. We're going to be going through today very quickly just a little bit about what's going on with RFK Jr. had this really amazing truth bomb statement. So we're going to look at that and sort of pick that apart. Look at what's going on in the United States and elsewhere in the West, where the Western experiment, Western Civ, seems to be on the ropes. It's tangled around its own axle, doesn't know what to do. Metaphors for that are rampant. But we could look at the Riley Gaines episode that happened recently at San Francisco State University. A really gross, ugly sort of thing. We'll take a peek at that. What it means. Now, remember last time, people really reacted, Evie, well, last time to what we were talking about, which was this whole idea that perhaps Gen Z's, the millennials, were a little soft. Remember those two professors, Emeritus, and they both said, they can't reason, they can't think, they're a little thin-skinned. Not everybody, of course, right? So this is painting with a broad brush. But
we had a great conversation about it, though.
We did.
Yeah.
Actually, and we continued conversing about that ever since. So
it's true. It's true. I mean, it's just great to explore these topics, and that's why we're here.
Yeah. So we'll do all of that. So, well, I guess let's go there. So this is what I wanted to talk about, is just adrift in sinking. And one of the things I've been talking about with our subscribers over at Peak Prosperity is this concept that of all people, we're quoting Lenin. That doesn't make us commies per se, but he had this one right. He said, there are decades where nothing happens, and there are weeks where decades happen. Welcome to those weeks. That's what it's been.
Isn't that the truth?
So you want to know what my number one thing was?
Yeah, tell
I can't
me.
Like I can't. So if I could just get this one thing to people, it's this. China engineered a deal between the Shiites and the Sunnis, right? Between Saudi Arabia or Iran and Saudi Arabia, to keep the direction
going
right.
That sounds so strange. Right?
Making me able to say this phrase, which I never thought I'd say in my lifetime, which is China brought peace to the Middle East.
That is wild.
Isn't that wild?
No, because in the 80s and 90s, that's all you heard. Like, that was the rhetoric that they were constantly pumping out, at least the news media, about that. I mean, there are so many sort of instances of us trying to create peace in the Middle East with our interventions and such.
Well, one has to wonder if we were really trying. Was peace actually the goal? Or was the goal to keep everybody divided and conquered so that we could control their resources, you know? Perhaps that was it. But China seems to be legitimately bringing diplomacy. They are the new big diplomatic kids on the block, and it happened like that. It's pretty intense. I mean, this is decades just happened in the past couple of weeks. Plus the dethroning of dollar, king dollar, petrodollar, whatever you call them by. We're seeing all of that as well just going on. And I can't even understand how fast things are happening on the financial sphere out there. These are going to have enormous, gigantic impacts for everybody who's listening to this, mm-hmm. because we're all exposed, whether you are in Scotland or not, or here in the US or in Australia. Hey, we are all linked through this dollar-based system. And if you want to understand that more fully, go look at something like read up on what's called the euro-dollar system, which is the way in which dollars are created outside of the U.S. system as if they were inside the U.S. system, but they're still dollars. So everybody's still hinged to the whole same thing. It's a big, giant, soupy mess. It's just...
It's honestly.
It's a ridiculously soupy mess, but it still impacts all of us. So that's happening, right? And so when I think about... So here's what caught me as well. So there's China bringing diplomacy to the Middle East, right? And then watching the United States attempt to rise diplomatically to this new environment where it's obviously a multipolar world. It's obvious that the United States diplomacy is now in the tank. It's no good for anything anymore. Our style is to just blow stuff up. And if that doesn't work, we'll blow more stuff up. And for some reason, people don't seem to appreciate us when we blow up all their stuff in their country, but you know, go figure. China treats them like equals, or at least with dignity, and then opens their magic checkbook and builds bridges and roads rather than blowing them up. So somehow that's winning friends and influencing people. I'm confused. We'll have to study this in depth in some.
Well, you catch more flies with sugar or honey than vinegar, right? Is that the saying?
Yeah, it turns out humans are humans. You know, that's the thing. Wherever I've gone, anywhere I've gone to a country, whether the United States is at odds with that country or it doesn't matter, they're just people when you get there.
Mm-hmm. Just humans.
You know, when they say, oh, you know, Obama accidentally took out a wedding party, I think somehow some people just think, oh, well, you know, just somehow they were deserving of it or less than or something. But if you were there, they'd just be people.
That's, right.
They would just be
like
humans.
You and me. Or
lives, hopes, dreams. Some of them are funny. Some of them are dicks. You know, it's just how it is. It's like the same everywhere. So people are people. At any rate. I want to talk about this. This is fabulous. So, so Ambassador Tracy, who is the ambassador to Russia of all places, writes here. Why don't you read this one, Evie?
All right. This says, this is Tracy speaking, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I have visited different countries, talked with different leaders of states, but only next to Putin did I feel uncomfortable. It felt like I wasn't in charge here, but he was. Never experienced this before. Very unpleasant.
I felt like I wasn't in charge in Putin's own country. It was a disorienting experience. I was just right. It's like I didn't know how to behave. It was kind of weird. Mm-hmm. Very, very disembodied experience to not be in charge.
Yeah.
In somebody else's sovereign nation. So first up, she looks the part, right out of central casting.
Well, that's an unfortunate picture.
That may be a fortunate picture for all you know.
It's true.
All right. She looks like a Karen. Okay. I'm just going to say that out loud. But no, this idea, look at that. Never experienced this before. I felt like I wasn't in charge. Very unpleasant.
Mm. You know, what's weird is that with social media now, we're actually getting to see like these diplomats and other people, we might not have heard a word about what it was like, what their experience was like being an ambassador to other nations. But now we actually get to see the level of intelligence or not that they're bringing to the scenario. It's interesting, isn't it?
Well, what's interesting to me is that it is. So only next to Putin did I feel uncomfortable. She's comfortable. She wrote this in a tweet. She felt comfortable saying, you know, because here's the world we're in right now, which is, as long as you're dumping on Putin, that's okay. It's acceptable. That's in the Overton window, as they call it, which is the acceptable parameters of polite discourse within the halls of power. So she felt comfortably within the Overton window to go and felt like she was going to get support for and sympathy even, I'll bet you, for going, I didn't feel comfortable around Putin. In fact, bizarrely, I didn't even feel like I was in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's a long way to fall when you've been king for a long time and then forgot to elevate senior, legitimate, awesome diplomats to positions of importance. So this is just, to me, that was just a perfect emblem for just how far things have to go to fall here for the United States. And VT Gothic, back at our website, hey VT, he wrote, I suppose this is fit for the unserious side post thread here, except this Karen is very serious. What makes it serious is what U.S. Ambassador to Russia Lynn Tracy reveals about the U.S.'s historical experience and what is the ongoing expectation when U.S. representatives show up in foreign capitals. How unsettling it must truly be to discover oneself standing beside a truly sovereign state leader, no longer receiving deference. Safe spaces are shrinking. Neoliberal narcissists don't like it. Not one little bit.
No, they don't. As we said last week, it's considered an attack.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like it.
Yeah, when you set a boundary, when all you do is just set a boundary for a narcissist, even if you just say, no, stop, I will no longer allow you to stab me.
Mm-hmm.
And they shriek.
They do. They freak out. It's interesting how that happens.
Yeah.
It seems to happen almost every time, too.
Yep. Yeah, white balance needs correcting on the wide shot. I'll bet you're right on that. Yeah, it's a little yellow over there.
It's a little dark.
We are still working through this whole setup, but it's getting better. We're getting their sound is better, right?
It is. I hope. Yeah. Chris has been spending a lot of time on it, so we hope it definitely is better.
Yeah, we're getting there. But please keep telling us. I'm a quality nut. So anything that can be improved, let me know. I do like that. So, all right. Evie, you ready for this part?
Yeah. This is an important piece.
Yeah, I want to go through this. So.
Yeah, just stop me when you want me to pause. Okay. The collapse of U.S. influence over Saudi Arabia and the kingdom's new alliances with China and Iran are painful emblems of the abject failure of the neocon strategy of maintaining U.S. global hegemony with aggressive projections of military power.
Yeah. So, go Robert. yes. He's dropping the truth bomb on this, which is, you know, it's not too strong of a term, I don't think, to say U.S. influence over Saudi Arabia and the kingdom's new alliances with China and Iran. That is a collapse. That is a collapse of influence. And that's what Ambassador Karen K. Tracy, that's what Ambassador Tracy was experiencing.
Yeah.
Must have been disorienting. You just get this fawning, you're the ambassador, you know, red carpets get rolled out. You know,
give me some deference.
I don't know what could be going wrong, because every time I see Kamala Harris talking, she's just obviously sprucing up the image of the United States overseas, right?
Shoot.
It's not good.
Continuing along.
It's just not good. not so good. All right. Yeah.
China has displaced the American empire by deftly projecting instead economic power. Over the past decade, our country has spent trillions bombing roads, ports, bridges, and airports. China spent the equivalent building the same across the developing world. The Ukraine war is the final collapse of the neocons' short-lived, quote, American century.
Now, hold on. The American century. So I'm cursed with this memory thing. So... I don't know if you remember this, but there was something called the Project for a New American Century, and it came out like in 1998, and the signatories on it included then not Vice President Dick Cheney, Feith, Pearl, Rumsfeld. There were all these characters. They're the neocon core, right?
Mm-hmm.
Surprise, in that document, Project for a New American Century, they said, gosh, you know, we'd really like to project American hegemony. We'd really like to have American power. We want to be uncontested. It's an American world. It's the new American century. Not decade, you know, and they wanted to set it up. So, but they were like, gosh, how would we do that? How would we do that without a new Pearl Harbor, as they put it? And surprise, those were all the same people in power at the time when 9/11 happened, which was the new Pearl Harbor.
True.
I think it might've been Roosevelt who said, there are no coincidences in politics.
Mm.
I don't think it was a coincidence, but that's my own view on what happened there.
I remember hearing about that, the New American Century.
Yeah, so when
project.
we when we talk about RFK, he's dropping that bomb on him right now. He's like, yeah, hey, you all you neocons in your new American century, calling it short-lived. Mm-hmm. I mean, ooh, this is just pithy. Like, it's just like there's this cat's getting its nose rubbed in the dirt. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. He's so intelligent. He goes on to say, the neocon projects in Iraq and Ukraine have cost $8.1 trillion, hollowed out our middle class, made a laughingstock of U.S. military power and moral authority, pushed China and Russia into an invincible alliance, destroyed the dollar as the global currency, cost millions of lives, and done nothing to advance democracy or win friendships or influence. Ouch.
Ooh, here. Ouch. Oh, that's ouch. That is what it is. So the reason this is so critical to me right now, the reason this is so important is that, you know, I track resources and I'm really big about this whole idea that we have a lot of dreams and fantasies. We're going to move to this new green energy, alt energy future. But when you do some simple math and you say, how much copper would we have to mine out of the ground? How long would that take? How much lithium is there compared to how much battery capacity we would want, et cetera? You just do a simple, simple calculation. I swear to God, it takes a crayon and a napkin and about 3 minutes of Googling to get the answer. And it's very simple, which is there isn't enough of any of that stuff. Not even close. Okay, then what is the plan? Well, we better get off these fossil fuels because eventually they're going to run out. Maybe not immediately, but someday. So what's the plan? After 15 years at this business, I can tell you something. There is no plan in the United States. Nothing. So, and what's really bizarre is if you look up something like liquid fuels emergency, let's imagine the United States ran down its SPR. Nobody would do that. But you take your strategic petroleum reserve and you run it down to zero. And then you just drill up your own oil lands as fast as you can, use it up as fast as possible. And then you get into a liquid fuels emergency because maybe, I don't know, there's a war with China and somehow the Strait of Hormuz gets blocked. Okay. What would you do? Well, you'd have a plan for that, right? That'd be like saying, oh, I live in a house, but I have literally no plan for how I'm going to get out of it if it catches on fire. I don't know where the exits are. I haven't really taken the time to figure that out.
The windows are too small.
The windows are all nailed and painted shut. You know, it's stupid. So you're thinking, Chris, you're wrong. There has to be a liquid fuels emergency plan. So I go looking for one. And out of the 33 federal departments, when I was looking around, you could find what they were going to do for a salmonella bioterrorism attack. USDA has a plan for that. DHS has a plan for that, right? Et cetera. So you go look and you're thinking, well, liquid fuels emergency, this is really critical, right? USDA, which is overseeing the nation's farms, which use a little bit of that stuff, right? To,
yeah, it might be important.
You know, plow and harvest and transport, right? It's kind of important to the food system, you know, agricultural system. They do not, as of the last time I looked, which admittedly is probably 5 years ago, they did not have a liquid fuels emergency program. They had dozens of plans for everything from a new pathogen that's detected to drought to you name it. No liquid fuels emergency. So the United States plan is this is never going to happen. That's the plan. And so back to RFK. This is what he's talking about here. So at a time when we need to be advancing democracy, you know, making alliances, winning friends, all we're managing to do in this story is go, I'm not feeling so important anymore. This is a big moment of existential crisis for Ambassador Karen here, right? But it's just emblematic, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you guys think?
Well, let's see. Sean says here, love RFK. Yeah. You know what? I do too. I really do. And he's really, you know, when you're in, if you're around him, mm-hmm. he just exudes. I don't know. You can't buy it. You can't train it. He exudes. Is royalty the right word? There's a presence.
Yeah.
He's just a powerful figure, you know, like a lot of good politicians are, but and he's really got it.
You've interviewed him, right?
Mm-hmm.
What was that like to interview him? Could you feel it like over the airwaves kind of a thing?
Yeah. Yeah. He and of course, I fell in love with his book, The Real Anthony Fauci, because it's literally a 800 page prosecutor manual. I mean, it is just he's got the goods, right? And here's the thing I know about him. He operates with integrity. So if he believes something, he will do that, say that.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Is he running? Did he officially announce that he's running?
You know, the name has been tossed out there. I think he still has an upcoming official announcement, I think, but I'm not positive. But we'd have to wait and see what that.
Because I'm curious if he'd be too smart for our country. You know what I mean? Like, that was very well articulated,
mm-hmm.
that piece. Like, so much is within that paragraph, and I'm just wondering if it might go over, you know, just the average American's head. Because he's just very intellectual, you know?
Yeah.
And not as, maybe, perhaps not as charismatic as Trump or, you know, other people.
My concern is that his uncle and then his father both took it to the hoop against the power structure. It didn't go so well for either of them, you know?
Right, that's true.
JFK and RFK, so.
I think they're honorable men for trying, though.
They were. They absolutely were.
I love that,
you know? They did. Anyhow, we'll see where he goes with that. But I thought that was really something. And so, yeah, I think of it, you know, he's dropping the truth bombs here. And we have hollowed out the middle class, and we're going to have just massive, massive inflation. Because here's the thing about inflation is a complicated phenomenon, and it's not rising prices. It's the loss of value of your money because we printed too much money. The reason it's complicated is that it's not just one thing. There's no, like, inflation is 8.3%, and that's what it is. It might be twice that in fine art or half that in soybeans at any given moment, right? So it's kind of the average, but... The thing about inflation is inflation goes and happens where the money goes. So when you print money, it goes somewhere and it does something. So for the past couple decades, they've printed up all this money and it's gone to Wall Street. And because it's gone to Wall Street, all the things Wall Street cares about have inflated massively. Trophy properties, Gulfstream 650s, high-end apartment penthouse complexes in all the major cities, art, jewels, you name it. All that stuff is through the roof. Probably hookers and blow in all the right areas, right? Because those are the things that the people who got the money first spent it on. And then COVID came along and they actually printed some money up, but this time they gave it to people, right? Here you go, triple P loans. Here's some, you know, out of work funds and all of that. And because of that, what happened was we got real inflation. Plus there were supply shortages and that made prices go up. That's not actually the same thing as inflation, which is a monetary thing, blah, blah, complicated. All right. So the thing with war, though, the reason war is so doubly bad in this story is that you spend $1 million building this little missile. And then you press a button, it goes over and it blows something up. Two things happen. The $1 million got spent.
Right.
But then the thing you spent it on just got obliterated. And so did this other thing. So you got two units of destruction and one giant unit of money. So you have less stuff and more money. That's why war is always so inflationary because it's destructive of the things that you would make a real economy with.
Right.
I mean, it feels like a real economy. Somebody in Arkansas or Alabama is building HIMAR missiles, right? They get shipped over to Ukraine. They get a paycheck.
Right.
Real money, right?
Yep.
But the thing they built wasn't like they took that same money, hired somebody from Alabama to build a steel girder complex assembly that goes into a new bridge that opens up a new area for economic, you know, its expansion.
Right.
They built something that then just got blown up.
It's like a black
literally,
hole.
We're going to pay you to shovel money into a furnace. Mm-hmm. That's the war machine. Anyway, that's why it's so doubly bad.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, this is how I think of it. You know, there it is. The truth bombs. Go RFK.
Woo!
I love it. I love when people bring the actual truth. And then, of course, you know what happens when they bring the actual truth, right?
Oh, that part.
Some people get a little upset, particularly those who are no longer used to being challenged or in any way hearing something other than what they want to hear at any moment in time. So,
yeah, who are you speaking of?
Ambassador Karen.
Who freaked out?
Oh, lots of people freaked out. By the way, Lieutenant General Mike Flynn, who I'm on this really weird text chat, and so I get to chat with him from time to time. Really nice guy. He said, but he, in response to that thing that RFK put out, he said, "I could not say it any more clearly. RFK Jr.'s analysis is as spot on as it gets. And neocons exist in both parties." Very important. This isn't like left, right. Both parties, uniparty, we have a problem, Houston, right?
Mm-hmm.
This below, along with complete destruction of our domestic landscape, including, truth bomb alert, a rotten public education system, an unrelenting southern invasion of our border, the scourge of illegal narcotics, with it horrific human trafficking, an overarching broken and corrupt federal government, and a healthcare system that few trust anymore.
Sounds bad.
They're just landing all over the place, right?
Yep.
2023 will experience financial and health challenges alone like the U.S. has not experienced in a century or ever. There are solutions. Paying greater attention to your surroundings and getting involved in your communities are among them. This is an honorary Peak Prosperity member, as far as I can tell. Your communities.
Welcome.
Welcome. Welcome, General Flynn. We'd love to have you. Well said. I totally agree with that. There are a lot of issues out there. And what are we doing about those issues right now?
In the world? Mm-hmm. What are we doing personally?
Oh, we could talk about what we're doing. Yeah.
Is that what you want to talk about? Well, we're doing lots of things. We're trying as hard as we can to nourish our land and our soil. And we've got animals here, cows and pigs and chickens. And we're trying really hard to leave something for the next generation. And of course, we enjoy doing these things too. It's a huge learning curve, but it's been amazing. Hardest mm-hmm. physical work we've ever done. And we're also trying to create sort of an education center here where we can help people reskill and get back into their bodies and get used to doing some of those physical things that you need to learn side by side with somebody else or actually practice to know how to do it with your hands. So,
mm-hmm.
But is that what you were referring to, or were you talking about education?
Well, I sort of had a general question about what the U.S. is or other countries. Like, what are we, the collective, we really doing about these things? I mean, this is just an empire in decline, right? You can feel the thrashing about.
Yeah, you can.
As all our key institutions fail, our cultural fabric, whatever it was, is now shredding and or revealed to have been gossamer thin in the first place, on and on, right?
Right.
So I think that one of the things that we can and should be doing is related to this comment here by Janet Greenhall here. Question, if our community saved Canadian currency and defaced it with a stamp to be used as local currency, do you think it could be sustainable? A sustainable means of trading goods of unequal value. Can you make your own currency system? So, interesting question. You want to know what I think? Your currency system is going to fail. As bad as the United States is, you look at household indebtedness in Canada, and it's just the whole system's kind of screwed. So we all have to be ready for this idea of having a larger monetary failure at some point, particularly if the euro dollar, petrodollar, Canada and US all tied together. So what would you do? How would you make a actual new currency? So this is something I talked about at Peak Prosperity last week. You want to know what scared me this past week?
Yeah. Tell us.
So there's a kind of silver out there called junk silver, which in the United States means pre-1965 quarters, dimes, half dollars. It's the old circulating currency, but just pre-1965. So 64, 63, 62, back to the 1800s.
Yep.
It had 90% silver value, and it was always called junk silver. I don't know why junk. It was, I mean, in the 80s, it kind of was. It was kind of junk. They had these big buckets of it. And when I first started buying junk silver, I could usually buy it for if spot silver was, say, $10 an ounce, I could buy that in a silver ounce equivalent of about 980, maybe 975. Like it was below spot.
Wow.
So spot minus something.
Right.
For a long time, it went to sort of spot equal, you know, because it's 90% silver, you know, blah, blah. For now. So I went out last week and I'm looking for this junk silver. And I discovered, much to my dismay, that it's basically out of stock on every major site out there. They either say pre-order now or be patient or it's just out of stock or it's hideously expensive, right? So it was trading for the equivalent of anywhere from $41 an ounce equivalent, which at the time I looked that up, silver was trading at 25. So it is now trading somewhere between 60% and 80% over spot on all these major websites where it was out of stock.
Oh my gosh.
If something's out of stock, that means there is not a market clearing price. When you have a market clearing price, the price is high enough to attract somebody to sell it. Now you're not out of stock.
Right.
So what is that price? You wander over to eBay to get a sense of that. And junk silver on eBay is trading right now for the equivalent of $49.95 an ounce. That is the true market clearing price for junk silver. Now, why am I giving you this big sort of side discourse on silver? Because the reason I bought that junk silver was exactly up Janet Greenhall's idea here, which is that I thought, well, if I have this stuff, if the main currency collapses, it's still something recognizable to people, but it's silver. So maybe, you know, I could be help reseed the local commerce by having, you know, reintroducing silver back into local circulation, because you need money.
Right.
Like, you need money to conduct business in, you know, to just live life. It's just part of it. We can't do barter. It's not going to cut it. Right.
So, and you can't do seeds.
So the reason I got worried was, you know, we got all the stuff about the dollar collapse and, you know, petrodollar this and all that. And I thought that maybe enough other people had the same idea I did, which is I should get some junk silver in case the system goes down. Anyway, I'm taking that huge premium in junk silver as an indication of the number of other people who are also detecting on whatever level, gut, head, they're detecting that there's a big problem in the paper-based, faith-based, dollar-based system. That's how I interpreted that. So,
that is interesting. Do you think that followed any sort of significant or any sort of event in the media? Like, do you know what precipitated that? Or do you think it's a multitude of signals kind of coming together that people are sensing?
Well, there was, they turn a switch every so often. They flick the switch and then things are okay to talk about. I've mentioned this, I don't know, 3 weeks ago when all of a sudden it was in NPR, Fox News, CNN talking about this dollar collapse or the potential threats against the dollar, however they phrased it, right?
Yeah.
Listen, it's very rare that they talk about threats to the overall dollar system ever. But for all three big networks to suddenly jump on it all at once.
True. Fox talked about it too, I think.
I am that coincidence theorist. I just felt like somebody got the memo, said, let's float these things out there. So maybe, but it's people are talking about it all over the place now. This would have been conspiracy theories 5 months ago. It's everywhere in the financial space right now. The threat to the dollar, And yeah. It's a real threat.
It's probably all of that other the alliances that are getting created too, and people dealing, doing transactions in yuan, or I can't say that word.
Yuan. That's like you on, yuan.
Yuan.
You on the stadium, podium, right? So, but anyway, so that's what I took from that. So Janet, yes, start thinking about local currencies and whether you stamped existing CDN currency or you made your own, it's kind of irrelevant, but you need something, right? And the thing with money systems are, the reason I gravitated towards silver as a concept is because you don't have to try and convince people why they should trust it.
Hmm.
Even if you had stamped CDN Canadian currency, people are going to have little questions. How many did they stamp? How much are these actually worth? What's to prevent them from stamping a billion more while I'm not looking? On and on and on.
Or is this counterfeit?
Currency.
Didn't they?
Yes, it's true. You have to have trust in the currency, the money. That's because that's what money does, right? So Stephen Jenkinson, the poet philosopher, has a really, really good book about money and the soul's desire. It's called, is the title. But in there, he talks about how money arose at a time when we went from the Code of Hammurabi, which were two pillars that were engraved with certain things that you had to know. Like eye for an eye, or, it had the basic, that was the first inscribed legal code. And why did we need that? Well, because we were suddenly moving out of this agrarian Dunbar number 150, ish village, nomadic tribe types into larger accumulations of people. It meant that your ability to trust by knowing went away. So now we had to push that off into things like money and law. And the money system is just important as the law. The appearance, if not the reality, of its solidity has to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So when your money gets debased, your whole culture gets debased. It's a big thing. It actually ruins a culture.
It is a big thing.
That's why when the Revolutionary War happened, the British, they just printed up what they're called scrip, continental scrip, by the cartload. And they were just seeding them all over the place to ruin our ability to conduct business over here.
Hmm.
It's a old tried and true thing. So that's why I call the Federal Reserve. They are monetary vandals. Okay. That's who they are. They are, but they're social vandals. At any rate, that's,
Oh, somebody says, like your t-shirt, Chris.
Yeah, this one plays a lot because, you know, you can say it's about the lies and silence and re-silence. It plays a lot of ways. I like that. All right. So where are we going with this? I know where I'm going with this. So let's talk. Let's switch gears if we can. And we're going to talk now about this idea of the social decay. What's sort of the markers, the signposts. So this is Riley Gaines, a collegiate at University of Kentucky swimmer. And she was very, very competitive and was at the top echelon of female swimmers in the country. And then this thing happened where the NCAA said, we have to honor trans women and we're going to have this trans woman come and compete. I don't know how to break it to the NCAA swim folks, but that's a dude. And her main point of coming against this was saying, look, this is unfair. Men and women are just fundamentally different. But here's the core of the unfairness. If Riley, while she was developing and coming into her swimming career, if she had taken testosterone as a female, if she had taken that mm-hmm. as a supplement to boost her muscle endurance and things right. like that, which it would have, right? She would have been kicked out right away, banned.
Right.
That's called cheating, right? It's called doping. There's a whole thing around that. So she would have been absolutely taken out of the situation as a doper, but then they let this guy who went through puberty and more with his testosterone intact start to grow his hair long and call himself a woman and start competing. And of course, he's crushing their records, right? And at this particular meet, he took gold. And that meant that uh-huh. all these girls who had worked really, really hard, these women who had worked, biological women who worked really hard, gotten up at 4 in the morning since they were like 12, worked hard. Because he was on that podium, somebody was not, right? And somebody got bumped off the bottom of that All-America list, the whole nine yards, right? And it's just deeply unfair. Right. Obviously. And to say otherwise is just not a balanced or supportable POV. I
mean, seriously, not to be mean or anything, but I feel like anybody that wants to compete like that, maybe they should all go and have their own like special Olympics somewhere. Just so that, you know, like, OK, you can go compete with people who have messed around with their biology a little bit. It's a wild card, you know, mm-hmm. but it doesn't feel fair for these girls or for other athletes to deal with that. And it doesn't go both ways either. A woman, you know what I mean? A girl that decides to be a man can't go into a sport and kick butt the way that they can in the reverse. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, there's clear biological activity that gets supported by this. So at any rate, so she's been, you know, something of a cause celebre. I'm sure a lot of you have seen this of late, where she now talks about this in really from the position of just like, look, this isn't fair, right? And it's not fair in swimming, but when you put biological males who are now calling themselves women into competitive sports like MMA, boxing, taekwondo, wrestling, that's where the unfairness becomes actually dangerous. And it just couldn't be more obvious. I mean, it's just like you couldn't be more obvious, right? Does this mean I'm completely not getting this new wonderful utopia that other people? No, this is just complete common sense and everybody knows it, right? So at any rate, but here's where it gets, you know, beyond that debate. So Riley then, she goes and she gives talks. And so she's giving a talk at San Francisco State University, SFSU. Okay. And she's given a talk and it's been fairly well received. And there's people and she's, you know, talking. She's at the podium and at Q&A. Yep. So she's leaving this event. And it turns out the hallway had been flash mobbed by some folks.
Okay.
And so just bear with me a second because we're going to go to that video. I just have to turn our microphones won't work while I do this.
Sure.
Because I have to turn ours off so this one plays. It's a thing. We'll get it more isolated. But here we go. Ready? So turn this off.
It's just me. I'm good. I'm coming. I'm good. Trust me, I'm good. Go ahead.
There's a lot of swearing going on. Trans rights are human rights.
Trans rights are human rights!
Trans rights are human fucking rights!
My bitch! My bitch!
You're dressed like a communist.
Fuck you! Fuck you!
All right, that's enough of that.
Wow.
Reactions?
Let's see. Things have gotten so ridiculous, says Hunter. They look well adjusted.
So that's clearly, if you wanted to know what it must have been like to be in the crowd when they decided it was time to burn witches, right? This wasn't like just everybody realized they were doing something bad and, you know, everybody felt awful about it. No, the crowd was totally into it. They were down with it. These witches needed to be burned and they deserved to be burned. And there was this purification that happens with that. That's what I see in that. I see.
I do too.
Yeah, I see mob. That is a full on mob. And what is there? What are they this violently angry about, do you think?
Because she stood up for herself and is speaking her truth, apparently. I mean, what do you think? Because it doesn't seem like she did anything to attack them. I didn't hear what she said on stage.
Well,
but
she put up a barrier.
She just put up a boundary?
Put up a boundary and said, No, I don't agree with your worldview. And of course, that's heresy. And of course, that some of those people literally, if given the chance, would have burned her at the stake and cheered every dying, screaming breath of hers. That's what we're experiencing right now. So this is not obviously well adjusted. This is one of those periods you look back on and go, oh, the Salem witch trials. This is deeply embarrassing. You know, this is horrifyingly embarrassing.
It is. It's scary, too. I mean, this is a mind virus. Like, there's something that's happened to people, and I don't know when it occurred necessarily or when it began, but it's definitely been completely evident in the last 2 years. Like, people are not right.
Yeah.
And I don't know what that's from, but.
So it's a mob. So,
yep.
You know, this is building on last week's thing that we did and live stream. So, that live stream last time, we had a bunch of great comments under there. I'd like to turn to a couple of them, but one's really, really, really germane to what we just saw.
Mm-hmm.
Want to read this one?
Yeah, sure. Cynthia says, I worked at a very progressive summer camp from 2014 to 2021, and my job was to take kids to emergency room and the doctor's office. And I have to say, once the kids got past the original homesickness and disorientation stage, they were fine. I'd say exactly like kids were when I was a kid 50 plus years ago. Some of the kids had to get stitches and painful shots of local anesthesia right into the wound area, and the kids were just fine. Completely normal reactions. I was there giving them emotional support, and not a single kid reacted badly. Some teared up, but kept a brave face. Normal reactions. So, whatever is going on is a social contagion. Mm. They got no social benefit from behaving badly or having a meltdown when they were with me, so they didn't go there. Mm-hmm. They trusted me. And frankly, I had the discretion of taking them out for ice cream on the way back to camp. And guess what? In 7 years, never had a single problem with bad behavior. The setup of the camp was that I, as a staff member, could never be alone with a kid, so they always had a camper buddy accompanying them. Never had a problem with a camper buddy either. Anyway, I think we are incentivizing bad behavior, meltdowns, demanding, manipulative, antisocial behavior. It's not the kids. The kids are fine. Whatever is happening because the adults have abdicated authority and integrity and good old-fashioned grounding common sense that makes kids like and trust adults. P.S. The 20-something staff sucked, exhibiting all the bad behavior you mentioned in the video, but it's social, not organic. It's captains courageous. You get the kids away from the school contagion that reward all of this nonsense, and you get decentivized the bad behavior and it disappears.
Yeah, you get the kids away from that, from the social contagion. So they're mm-hmm. talking here about this is contagion time. So I agree. Yeah. This is an interesting idea to sort of bat around. It's not the kids. It's the adults, stupid. So imagine this. At San Francisco State University, all those kids are identified, right? And those of them who are actually students there are expelled. And their pictures are put up in the papers, called a public hanging in the world of business. Not an actual one, but, you know, you get the idea, where you show people. It's the perp walk, you know,
yep.
with, you know, out in front of all the cameras, out in front of the FBI building. It's that equivalent. You say, this is unacceptable behavior. The parents the adults, they're not setting the parameters. They're, in fact, they're rewarding it all the way up to the president of the United States saying, oh, we support this. It's about those mostly peaceful protests that burn down mostly small businesses, many cases, minority businesses in Kenosha and other places. Right.
Right.
Like, this is being rewarded. It is the adults in this story and the kids. They're behaving badly, but guess what? They're kids, but without consequences. And in fact, with a set of rewards for behaving that way. Right. You get more of it, not less. Who knew? Incentives.
Mm-hmm. Well, and to your point about the social contagion, that's also seems to be what's happening with the trans stuff. Like, it's definitely not that all of a sudden, in my opinion, that all of a sudden we have this influx of people who biologically are like, oh my God, I'm different. Maybe that's true, but more likely, I think, is that it's socially passed around, and then mm-hmm. everybody thinks that they have something different going on with them, where it's been planted in here. It's definitely not. I don't think it's originating in the body.
So, I mean, I just thought that was an interesting way to think about it, adding a little more to that conversation with that
yeah.
idea that it's the adults.
That is interesting.
Yeah, just something worth considering. But, you know, this is what I used to do. This is something I learned as a dad, right? Three young kids, you know, at one time.
Yep.
Now they're all grown up now. But I learned that, you know, a kid would like 2-3-year-old, they wipe out, right? They just mm-hmm. trip and boom. And you're just like, you know, there's that magic dividing line where decisions being made, like,
yep.
what's going to happen?
How bad am I hurt?
Right. That's right. Your kid's making the decision. Right. And I would come over and I would go, safe, you know, and 9 times out of 10, it did not end in tears. Right.
I had a friend who actually would like, if their kid fell down on the floor, they'd be like, oh, you hit the floor. Tell the floor you're sorry. Like, they learned how to, like, be like, oh, instead of, you know,
no,
just...
but if you said, oh, if you freaked out and you conveyed that parental, like, alarm, it would transfer mm-hmm. right to the kid and you'd get
right.
all this alarm. It actually becomes more damaging. I think that the child needs to learn that homeostasis, the self-regulation, right? It's an important part of going
right.
from 0 to 10, right? You know?
Right.
Just a big, yeah.
And it's like, I feel like our kids too, they don't seem to be as, I don't know, they've just become hypersensitive in some ways, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so as an adult, if you're parenting them and you react all freaked out to every little thing they do,
mm-hmm.
then I think you're incentivizing them to get attention and whatnot from you in that way. And
right.
so we see kids that aren't tough and they don't know how to handle situations.
Parents pass on a lot through osmosis and sometimes
yeah.
through direct instruction, but mostly osmosis. So, you know, if the parent is deathly afraid of bugs, the chance of the kid being deathly afraid of bugs is very high.
Yeah.
Right. And on and on and on. So to the extent parents are not modeling good behavior. So we heard about this a lot, right? The tiger parents, the helicopter parents, right? But I hear stories now of people saying, yeah, I heard this from a guy who was a number of years ago. He said his roommate showed up and had no clue how to human. Couldn't even make mac and cheese. Like, couldn't make any food. Was just completely bereft of any
wow.
skills whatsoever, because mom took care of all of that, right? And once a week or whatever, mom would helicopter in and gather up all the laundry and tidy up his room and make sure his, you know, homework was done and make mac and cheese.
How old was this kid?
You know, college student.
Wow.
Right?
Yep. Well, we're not doing
our kids. I won't even tell you what
I
did by the time I was college age. Different era, okay? Most of my childhood was a felony.
That's
right?
True.
You know?
Chris was very naughty. It's true.
I was experimental and inquisitive, okay? It's just
that's how
totally,
we learn.
Totally different thing.
I'll tell you some stories sometime.
All right.
Just kidding. So, you know, it's interesting. Oh, do you want to go into this? I was just going to say one thing about about kids in this day and age, in this environment. Like, I was thinking about it because we're, you know, this is a school vacation week up here in the Northeast. I'm sure a lot of you might have your kids home during this week. And my daughter's here, my 10-year-old's here. And I keep thinking about, like, what, how do you raise children during this time period? Like, it's such a bizarre time in history. What do you highlight? What do you sort of brush past because you don't want to draw a ton of attention to it? You know, based on the idea that things can be a contagion from you as a parent as well.
Remember, you know? Chris Rock famously said back in the day, he's like, you know, the one job of a dad is to make sure your daughter doesn't end up on the pole, right? Right. But today it ought to be your job is to make sure they don't end up in the hallway screaming like a lunatic.
True. Yep. Right? There's that.
The pole is actually an honorable job. You earn good money. But that hallway thing, oh my gosh.
Right, you're making me blush now. Okay. Yes. And I'm curious what you guys think about this. And we do read the comments, so feel free to drop something in the comments about this. But I, for me, what I came up with was, as a parent, one of the things that I need to do is to get support. So to find people around me that believe similarly, aunts and aunties and uncles that I can connect my children to when they get to that point where, you know, they need to hear something from somebody other than myself. I think that's important. And then I was realizing that if you can create groups outside of school, unless you're homeschooling already, which is great, you can find that tribe of people and then you can share sort of the job of taking care of them. And I think taking but that
is the goal here is like, how about just get them outside?
Well, that's my other, I have that here. Get them outside is totally probably the most important thing, honestly.
Eating mud, right?
Eating mud, eating worms. I used to make things like that when I was a kid, like stews and stuff out of mud and berries and leaves and soil. But I think we should, as parents, and maybe I'm speaking to myself, but I need to take more initiative and find those groups. I need to limit like online screen time and make sure that I'm setting boundaries, you know, around like what my daughter, what she's able to view and play and all of that. Because as we know, even the people that created these apps and stuff like that don't let their own children on there. So that should be telling us something.
But even like the apps that aren't like violent, shoot 'em up or, you know,
oh, sure.
All of them are designed to hijack the dopamine pathway.
Oh, yeah. You right? can see it. Your kids are like cranky if you take that away. You can feel it.
Yep.
So anyway, I the other thing is I think we need to model good online etiquette. So if we can start to, you know, limit our own time doom scrolling or whatever, right? Because they're watching us and they're doing what we do, not just what we say. So, and I think eating meals together is really important and doing a lot of reading. And I added prayer to the bottom because I'm just at that point where I don't know what else to do about the situation.
Yeah.
Add some prayer for good measure.
All right. Let's go here. Thank you, Stan says, Evie's getting better at this now, just letting herself speak with confidence. She is really adding a lot to the conversation because confidence seems to be there now. So
Thanks for that. You're going to make me blush again.
Stan and Sammy said, your shyness. I see your shyness, hun. Thank you for being brave. And presenting these shows, you rock.
Oh,
you're finding some,
thank
some
you.
Supporters out there, as
thank
we
you,
knew
Sammy
you would.
And Stan.
And Emmeline Delape here said, thanks, Evie and Chris. As an Australian who can be very honest, I am used to upsetting people. I offended many people when I lived in Canada because I expected the people to, working for me to work hard and do their job.
yeah.
Ooh.
She's our peeps.
Ooh, I resemble that. Happens to me too. The people who work here who get along, we're all hard workers and they just get the job done. That's it. That's the bar. It's
yep.
also called farmer style. By the way, Chris, I also read Lord of the Rings when I was 12. Cool. Yeah, I just got sucked into that.
So
we talked
good.
About that last time. So thank you for these comments. We do read them and we're going to pull them up on a weekly basis. It feels good to talk about what's down there. Annette writing in here says, Evie, thank you for saying you're shy. I made the mistake of thinking you were stuck up. Sorry for that. I remember when I was younger, people used to think I was stuck up. No way. I was shy. That's all. You're doing well, girly. Keep it up. Now I understand you're just very natural.
Aw.
Love to you both.
Thanks, Annette. That's very sweet.
That's a good one. And you are right, DJ. I am very lucky to have the lovely Evie by my side. Definitely blessed on that. Thank you for that. And this was interesting too.
Want me to read it?
Yeah, Jeremy. So there's actually, this is longer. So this is just the front part. There's the bottom part is two more paragraphs.
Oh, wow.
But it was all good.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and he talks about Martin Prechtal, who I love.
Uh-huh.
He's my man.
Yeah.
I love that guy. I hope to go to a school someday. Great to hear Martin Prechtal references. Great teacher of wisdom. He says, the generational thing is interesting. I was born in 1983, so I'm an older millennial. I think there's a huge difference between the older and younger millennials. I grew up with landline phones, no home internet until I was a teenager, and it was slow dial-up, yep. Mm-hmm. Playing outside all of the day, mostly unsupervised, and come home when the streetlights came on, yep. Personal cell phones for business people weren't common until after high school.
Non-business people.
Yeah. It happened, 9/11 happened that same year. We had cable TV and Nintendo, so there was still plenty of screen time in winter and bad weather. Very different than growing up with high-speed internet, cell phones, and some of the other things commonplace for those born 5 years after me.
Yeah, wow, what an extraordinary change. Like, it's too fast. Like, sometimes the technology just changes too quickly.
Right.
For the culture to begin to adapt to it. And the whole generation or two generations will pass, and then we'll look back and go, oh, we shouldn't have done that.
Mm-hmm.
We maybe shouldn't have hijacked their dopamine pathways when their brains were still developing, because that actually short-circuited and fried synaptic processes in an irrecoverable way. We might discover that.
Right.
Right? Or, a story I like to tell, which is that I love GPS. I love it. You know, I use my little Waze. I wouldn't dream of going to Boston without having some kind of GPS mapping function, right? So that's the plus side. The downsides of GPS might include the fact that when the fishermen got it out of Gloucester, now instead of sailing out for 6 hours and sort of dead reckoning a little and figuring out where they were and starting fishing, they would go and drop their giant trawl nets, scrape up the bottom of the ocean, go home, offload their catch, come back out and start 6 inches to the left of where they stopped. And so the fish had nowhere to hide, and it was just too efficient. And in a couple of generations, we'll catch up with that and go, oh, we shouldn't fish that way, right? But the point is that when your technology is evolving faster than your culture's capability to manage that technology, it can get ahead of you. Spoiler alert, this stuff with AI is starting to worry me quite a bit, because no joke, we don't understand how it works. It can begin to self-iterate itself in an evolutionary process. There's always the possibility that it's going to be able to, well, we don't know. I mean, anyway, let's keep an eye on it. But there's some serious concerns out there. The Terminator might have been in a little precognition sort of a movie. The whole Skynet thing.
Scared me.
Like, it's a possibility. We have to admit it's a possibility. And if we were being rational and intelligent as a species about this, we would say, you know what? We're going to put this stuff in a sandbox until we understand it.
Right.
We're definitely not releasing this to the open environment of all things silica if it turns out we rely on those 100% to live.
Right.
If our computer systems just suddenly went down for some reason and global trade stopped and foundries suddenly broke down and everything just like went haywire, it's lights out. Like, literally, if the machines take over and shut down our basic infrastructure, 1 year, 90% loss of human life would be
like,
my guess.
Like, they did it on purpose. They were planning to do that. And they're like, okay, let's cut off. They get together and conspire together.
Yeah.
That's
scary. I've used ChatGPT enough to go, oh, this thing's getting better. At light speed, like faster than we can adapt to it. College professors already are going to have to figure out, like, forget about it. Writing is like a cooked deal. Like, you can't,
There's no way to tell.
You can't tell, right? But on the other side, like, the things you can discover about it is pretty intense. But point is, it's now outstripped our cultural capability to begin to manage the implications of it, because it's moving at a speed we can't possibly catch up to from a cultural standpoint. So it could outstrip our capabilities and could go haywire on us before we've had any sort of ability to respond to that, or by the time we do respond to it, it could have gone haywire enough that something bad has happened. I don't know. What if somebody uses this AI? I don't want to give people ideas, but to ask it to write the most malicious code ever, you know?
Right. Ugh.
What if somebody figures out how to use ChatGPT to pretend it's Nigerian princes and start, like, you know, doing ultra fishing expeditions, right? With deep fake AI. It's going to be really hard to manage, you know? Anyway.
It is.
Point being, we're going to discover that maybe our technology Got a little ahead of it.
I knew it all along.
You did. That's easy.
Sorry. No. Yeah. I'm not a technology person.
All right.
And I've always been like, I don't want this thing on me tracking every move I make.
Yeah.
No, thank you.
All right. Let me carry on with Jeremy's great comment here. Thank you, Jeremy, for this comment. Totally appreciate it. Carrying on his next paragraph, he writes, quote, I moved around a bit and was hanging out a lot with friends from the same sort of subculture as me, but 5 to 10 years younger. I noticed they didn't value depth or wisdom. They were less interested in unpacking concepts and arguing over philosophy. They had a script and they stuck to it. And if you challenge it, it must be due to some terrible flaw in your character, not theirs. As a young adult, I hung out with readers, thinkers, punks, hippies, and activist types. Most of them were doers. The people that I hung out with weren't nearly as fragile or lacking in inner life as the article describes for my generation, the one we discussed last week. It's strange, though, because some of those same people are now more fragile and close to alternative explanations than they were in their 20s. It's been remarkable to see the same power structure rally the conservatives post 9/11 and the Bush years pivot to rally the same type of agenda, but frame it in the left instead of right. And I've watched a lot of close friends get swept up with that. And yeah, I'm with you on that one, Jeremy. So that's what we were talking about, right? The sense of isolation, loneliness, because the mind virus has taken some people over, right?
Yep.
Like otherwise very intelligent, smart people. Oh, you know, I'm going to, so I think tomorrow I'll release this. Sunday, Easter Sunday, great time. I did a big takedown of Neil deGrasse Tyson, so take a look out for that. I'm going to release that video tomorrow because he said the stupidest things I've ever heard come out of a mouth, but it was, and it's not because he's unintelligent.
Because he's a scientist? Is that why it offended you?
Yeah, it offended me because he was talking with full moral authority about science saying, but science is all about the consensus, right? Anyway, I do a big takedown of that tomorrow and shred that. but it speaks to this mind virus. He got taken over with a mind virus. You have to really, your cortical thinking has to get really effed up to, as a scientist, to say, you know what's more important? It's not the individual scientist. It's the scientific consensus. Mm-hmm. What? You mean the consensus that was sure the Earth was flat for a while and then at the center of the universe and then, you know, on and on and on, right? There are things we're going to learn in a year or two. Yeah. And this is why I'm excited by RFK, because he knows stuff about our pharma business that really should have been revealed decades ago. And it's gross and it's ugly. And it pertains to more than just the COVID vaccines. It pertains to SSRIs, benzodiazepines, you name it. These things are proverbial, not two-edged, but maybe six-edged swords. And only one of them is a benefit and the other five are not. And we're learning this and we're figuring this out. But you know what? We didn't figure that out from the consensus. You know what the consensus did? They got it so that one in every three adults is on something or other. Now, that's a great business model. I understand why pharma was up to that, but had nothing to do with the medical consensus.
No. Or wellness.
Or wellness.
God.
Goodness gracious. And no.
That's awful.
Nothing about any of that. All right. So I guess we're going to close out here with just this one thing I want to talk about. Common knowledge, the common knowledge alert. Remember, common knowledge is when everybody knows that everybody knows, right? So if everybody knows that everybody knows, then you actually get to common knowledge. Private knowledge is you and I and Evie individually talking about something. It's common knowledge when we all know that everybody else knows the same thing we're talking about. So common knowledge alert, we're getting there, and we're getting there with this. Bang! Switzerland just withdraws all COVID recommendations for vaccines.
Wow.
All.
Finally. Yay!
All. Just happened on Friday, April 7th, right? Switzerland stops the COVID vaccinations. Get this. This is where, like, the boom, this is where the depth charge gets dropped in this. All vaccination recommendations have been withdrawn. Doctors can only administer the controversial vaccines in individual cases under certain conditions, but then bear the risk of liability for vaccination damage.
Oh, wow.
Ooh. Ooh. See?
Wow.
See where we're going with that?
Yeah. Finally.
Ooh.
Oh. Now we're talking turkey.
Yep.
This is great.
Doctors can only administer these controversial vaccines in individual cases under certain conditions, and then they bear the risk. Incentives.
Is that something that's written in some sort of a legislation? Like, how How has that been figured out? The risk of liability, is that just somebody's opinion?
No, this is just, it's part of Swiss law now. So they just passed this part of their health authority.
Like,
this got passed. So now, in this larger story, we have that the Danish started it, where they said nobody under 18, and then it became nobody under 50. No longer recommended, but this is another step in a further direction, which is actually saying it's not allowed except under very specific circumstances. So they flipped the structure of this whole thing. So
yeah,
common knowledge.
I'm so glad.
Switzerland is absolutely getting there. So at any rate, with that, we'll end there. Thank you so much for your comments. Hit like, hit subscribe if you could. We really like that, right?
Yeah, it gets it out. It gets the message out there so that the algorithm can begrudgingly decide that it has to share it with other people. we're fighting the algo the time.
Yeah, well,
poor Chris.
Yeah, we fight the algo. So with that, and as well, leave your comments and we will look through them and talk about them next week if they strike us and strike our fancy. Mm-hmm. We read them. We love your comments. We love the engagement. I can't believe I already said we're ending, because now you're going to wander away. But we have a brand new website at Peak Prosperity. We're super excited about it. It has extraordinary new features and capabilities. The whole community is excited and buzzing. If you want to come and be part of that new community, come on by Peak Prosperity and check that out. It is amazing very quickly.
I know. Go I for said, it. Go.
I'm bad at this. Here we are. So my goal for this next year. In 2008, I was consumed with this idea. I had to create this thing called the Crash Course, biggest body of work I've ever done in my life. I have a PhD. I did more work for this than I did for that. And it was intense, and I'm very glad I did it. I would not redo it today, because I'm glad it's in the can, but it's not what the world needs today. Today, I'm consumed with the same idea that I have to do something, which is to help people like you find people like us and each other here in the virtual world, so that you can begin to find each other in the real world, because it's those connections that are going to form the difference between those who thrive over the coming troubles and those who merely survive or don't make it at all. So that's our job at Peak Prosperity, is to help you find all the other people out there who are like you. And I'm investing like crazy in making that happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing that. And whatever you do, everyone, go outside, get some beautiful fresh air today, and have a happy, happy Easter weekend, however you choose to celebrate that.
Indeed. Thank you very much for listening. We will see you next time, and it's been wonderful being here with you. All right. Bye, everyone.